dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whose intelligence I've come to respect greatly, and his courage and his clarity about the nature of the war for the free world, is our first guest. His name is Dr. Sean Lin. He is a former United States Army officer, a clinical doctor who has worked in the virology lab at Walter Reed. He has been a survivor of the Tiananmen Square massacre in his native China. And he is these days a leader of the fight against organ harvesting that is being perpetrated by the Chinese Communist Party against people in his faith community, the Falun Gong, and against others as well, part of the genocidal oppression of the CCP, of the people of China and others. And increasingly, unfortunately, we believe their aspiration is to enslave the entire world. Sean Lin, it is great to have you back here. Thank you for joining us to talk a little bit about a very important program that we're doing today. As we speak, it is in prospect. As this program airs, it will have occurred. I'm anxious to share with our audience what you anticipate will be the most important takeaways from this conversation about the Chinese Communist Party practice of, I call it organ genocide. Talk to us about it.
Okay, Frank, thank you for inviting me back. And so, yes, the organ harvesting thing is one of the darkest evil the Communist Party has practiced for decades inside China. And today we organize these webinars and bring in experts to further expose the crime of live organ harvesting. In particular, I think a few issues we want to highlight is that these live organ harvesting killing a lot of Falun Gong practitioners and also many religious minorities and prisoners of conscience. And those organ harvesting is not just a violation of medical ethics. It's not just forced organ harvesting. It actually, many of the cases were organ harvesting of living people. So basically, it's a slaughtering process, and then also take organ and make profit from it. So it's a large state-sanctioned, lucrative industrial production for the Chinese Communist Party. And
an actual enterprise at the state level.
Many of the research indicating this is a cold genocide, like one of research by Maria Chong, Dr. Torsten Trey, and also human rights lawyer David Matas, they also clearly indicate that this is a cold genocide. So basically, cold genocide is a multifaceted strategy that has no bounds as to what means or methods can be used to completely annihilate a target group from society. So it's a strategy used by the Communist Party since the crackdown of Falun Gong in July 1999, and they aim to thoroughly and effectively eradicate Falun Gong practitioners without alerting the international community.
I suspect, Sean Lin, that most of our audience is familiar with Falun Gong, but describe, if you would, its character, and what is it that makes the Chinese Communist Party so determined to annihilate its practitioners?
Yeah, so Falun Gong is an ancient Chinese spiritual practice which embrace the core value of truthfulness, compassion, and tolerance. In Chinese, we call it Zhen Shang Ren. And these groups has teachings to improve their mind and body, and also have five sets of exercise, like meditation exercise, to improve their physical condition. So it's a holistic improvement system. And so since Chinese people are very familiar with different energy exercise, Qigong exercise, so when Falun Gong was introduced to the public in 1992, it quickly gained its momentum. So by 1999, it reached to over 70 million to 100 million followers in China. So this group became even bigger than the Communist Party. So this is one of the biggest threat that the Communist Party feel. This is a large group of people who have spiritual believing, they have their own independent thinking, and they are not following communist ideology. So the Communist Party got scared. And at the time, the leader was Jiang Zemin for the Communist Party. So he decided to label this group as called, and then decided to launch the crackdown since July 99. So basically, it's an ideology, you can say confrontation, right? Because the Communist Party is always do not want Chinese people to believe in any spiritual beings and do not want people to have their own independent thinking. Falun Gong is such a large group of people, the Communist Party cannot control, so they decided to want to wipe out this group.
In fact, I think it's fair to say the Chinese Communist Party wants the people of China to worship only the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party at the moment, Xi Jinping, and have been brutalizing various faith communities. The Uyghurs have been prominently described as the victims of genocide. Christians are being terribly persecuted, Tibetans, all the faith communities. But the Falun Gong seem to have been subjected to this particularly horrific crime against humanity. And not to get too graphic about it, but you're talking about people being brought in alive and having organs taken from their bodies while they are still conscious and alive. This is an unimaginably, depraved practice. And the evidence of it is what, Sean? Is it all anecdotal? Is there actual proof that this is being done, even on an individual level, let alone on this industrial scale?
Yes, I think there are a lot of evidence now. One of the critical groups are doing a lot of investigation and collective different evidence and have a thorough review of those evidence is the China Tribunal. And this was initiated in 2018. And then after 1 year, thorough review of all the evidence collected.
In the United Kingdom?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was established in the United Kingdom, but it has an international presence. And it was led by Sir Geoffrey Nees, who was in charge of the trial for Milosevic, so the former leader in the Yugoslavia. And so these China Tribunal judges reviewed the evidence for almost a year and have made the final conclusion that these organ harvestings happened in China, and it's proved beyond reasonable doubt. And so there are a lot of the different groups doing investigation. For example, in today's webinar, we have Dr. Wang's group. They do a lot of phone calling into China, calling to different transplant centers, government agencies, and they add as transplant recipients, right? They make inquiry calls in the hospital, ask them, can we get organs from healthy Falun Gong practitioners? So many of these doctors, nurses say, oh yes, come over, we have those healthy organs, and if you're there, you can even come to the bedside. You can see young people in his 20s, things like that. You can get this kind of phone call evidence, and also you have
so this is basically on demand ordering of people's organs to match your DNA and your blood type and so on. So that this is, as you say, a highly efficient process. It speaks to the point that they're able to essentially obtain all of these organs at will because they have essentially a captive population. And to that point, something I want to come back to in a minute, but just how does the Chinese Communist Party know so much about the DNA and blood types and other health conditions of the Falun Gong practitioners from whom they're going to extract these organs involuntarily?
So after the persecution started, many Falun Gong practitioners went to appeal to the government at a different level, provincial level, central governments, right? So many of the Falun Gong practitioners, hundreds of thousands of Falun Gong practitioners were incarcerated because of their appeal to the government. And so with a large incarceration of Falun Gong practitioners, suddenly the Chinese government have a, like this large pool of you know, organ sources. So in these labor camp detention centers, sometimes they call it a transformation centers. The police can easily forcing people to take they call it a health exam. You know, ask you to withdraw blood, test, get your DNA information, get your tissue type, blood type, all these information. And with the development of the big data system, so the government build nationwide big data sources for the organs and for tissues
and
blood
in fact,
type. So,
as I understand it, their social credit system has essentially taken the data, not just from the Falun Gong, but basically the entire population of China, and made it available, health data as well as lots of other personal and private information, for the purposes not just of controlling the population there, Xianlin, but perhaps exploiting them in this fashion.
Yeah, yes. Right now, I think the data system is very mature, and they are not just aiming prison of conscience. And so, I mean, a typical example is in Uyghur area, they collected blood type information, DNA information, you know, for pretty much all the Uyghurs in Xinjiang area. So even now, some of those Uyghur people are released from so-called re-education center. About your information in the government database. So anytime they have a match, they can still catch you at will, anytime they want. So basically, they just treat people as a organ source, not like a human being. And those incarceration pays like an organ farm for them. So
As I say, an unimaginably horrific operation, and it just speaks volumes about the character of the Chinese Communist Party. I did interrupt you inadvertently, and you were about to introduce one of the other speakers at today's program, and I'd like to have you talk a little bit about his research. Ethan Gutman has been looking into this as an investigative journalist now for some time. Talk a little bit about his findings as well in terms of laying to rest the idea that there's maybe not sufficient proof of what you're alleging here to be, you know, taking action, as I believe we must, against the Chinese Communist Party for this crime against humanity, among others.
Mm. Yeah, Ethan Gutman is a very experienced investigative reporter, and he actually traveled to many places for Taiwan and to some of Southeast Asia countries in order to investigate about this organ harvesting situation as well. He talked to doctors, he talked to nurses who maybe organized organ tourism into China. And through many of these direct investigations, he collected a lot of evidence, and also through phone call investigation as well into China. So he wrote a book called Slaughter. And then he also have a report together with human rights lawyer David Matas. And so they've been documenting the Chinese government doing this very systematic organ harvesting, utilizing the military hospitals, judicial system, police systems, and working together with the transplant center, you know, make it a whole industrial lane. So now, you know, you can identify someone far away in Uyghur area and kill that person, and then quickly ship the organs to the East Coast in China, very efficient way. Even the airport has express lane for organ transplants, for organs. So
we know that there's a demand for these organs. We know that the Chinese Communist Party has institutionalized arrangements whereby that demand can be satisfied very rapidly, certainly far more rapidly than in the West. And therefore, there is this organ tourism trade taking place. And what we're going to document in this important webinar is just how much evidence there is that what the Chinese are doing to make this whole enterprise work is basically ripping the organs quite literally out of living Falun Gong practitioners, Uyghur Muslims, and now others, unfortunately, and what needs to be done about this. I did want to ask you in the remaining moment we have, Sean, about one other thing that takes advantage of your expertise, if I can. The issue of the origin of the coronavirus. When you were at Walter Reed, you were studying closely these kinds of things. We've talked over the past 18 months or so since this disease emerged, the pandemic afflicted this country and the rest of the world, about its source. What is your current assessment of where COVID-19 came from and how?
To me, I have no doubt that COVID started from Wuhan in China, and probably as early as October or November in 2019. The government clearly covered up the outbreak of this COVID in Wuhan. Where did it happen? What will be the animal reservoir? Who will be the patient zero? The government completely covered up this information. So even though the WHO team went into China to investigate, but the Chinese government did not collaborate, and they did not provide raw data, raw samples to the experts from the WHO team. And so basically, they try to use other excuse, other potential scenario, they call it, like through transmission, through frozen food, all these things to deflect
responsibility.
Deflect the responsibility. And but it's very obvious to me, it's an issue of the origin of the outbreak, not necessarily the origin of the virus, right? Because the origin of the virus, in Chinese government's term, it's like a scientific term. It takes decades to study, right? Because the virus, we know HIV for decades, but we don't know where did the HIV started. So the government wants the whole world to investigate the origin of the virus, and even saying you need to investigate other countries, other Southeast countries, or even blaming United States too. But to me, it's very clear, if you investigate the origin of the outbreak, it was clearly in Wuhan. And so the government denied it. But I think right now, the international society should focus on how Chinese government can be held accountable for lying to the international society, especially they did not tell the world that the disease was human-to-human transmissible. And especially after it had an outbreak in Wuhan, the government delayed several weeks. I think that's the biggest crime, because even if you have a if there was a small cluster outbreak in Wuhan, it could be easily contained if the government take responsible actions. And the whole
and the rest of the world could have done the same. Sean Lin, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. There's so much more to talk with you about. I hope we'll get you back on very soon, but thank you for your time today. You'll be able to find, folks, this very important webinar. I'm privileged to be the moderator for it. We have some very important experts and investigative journalists and other guests. Check it out at the Committee on the Present Dangers website, presentdangerchina.org. Sean Lin, come back to us again soon if you would. Thank you so much for joining us today. Next up, we'll talk with Joel Kaplan about another crime against humanity, the Chinese Communist Party's ripping off of investors, and some horrific stories that might touch on your life if you're not careful. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Secretary of State Tony Blinken has become the public face of the Biden administration's wrecking operation that is showing the world America is in decline and retreat. After years of Democrats, never-Trumpers, and even some actual Republicans denouncing Donald Trump's America First foreign and defense policies, they now appear by contrast as manifestations of robustness and successful U.S. engagement internationally. Tony Blinken's deep compromise by the Chinese Communist Party may have made unsurprising the dive he took when our country was roundly denounced by his PRC counterpart in Anchorage last spring. He has, however, subsequently gone on to run down the United States himself by endorsing the false narrative of our systemic racism, even inviting UN inspectors to investigate our national shortcomings. Yesterday, Blinken acknowledged an impending catastrophe in Afghanistan. Color him the poster child for America Last. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Joel Kaplan, a man who I think of as kind of every man in a way when one talks about one of the great challenges of our time, namely, what is happening in communist China to the money that American investors have been importuned or otherwise induced to place in various Chinese Communist Party associated enterprises, whether they're state-owned enterprises or whether they're ostensibly private enterprises. They're all working for the Chinese Communist Party, and in many cases, certainly in every case, if needed, for its People's Liberation Army as well. His name is Joel Kaplan. He was formerly a small businessman in the United States, successful in his line of work. He invested considerably in, among other things, Chinese green technology companies listed on NASDAQ, and he has suffered grievously for having done so. And we wanted very much, as part of a conversation we'll be having next with our friend Bill Walton about what the Chinese are doing to further erode investor confidence in Chinese investments, to talk about his personal experience with what he calls the China hustle. Joel Kaplan, it was great. We talked with you last year about this. We need an update urgently. I'm very pleased that you were featured in the intervening period by our friend Kevin Freeman in his economic war room. And there's a very long battle plan, as Kevin calls them, that has been developed to draw from some of your insights. But thank you for joining us to share them with us today.
Thanks, Frank. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan of the show.
Let me ask you, if you could quickly, to just give us a sort of read-in on what happened to you and how.
Okay. I'd like to dedicate this also to all the victims of the China hustle, because there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, and also all the victims of the Chinese Communist Party generally, and also to dedicate this to those that lost their lives due to this COVID and their friends and families. And just to remind everybody, in the spirit of the truth shall set us free, and we are living, as everyone knows, in very troubled times. As you mentioned, I was a guy that taught in high school. I trusted forensic accounting that was done, 10Ks and 10Qs like many mom and pop investors. And this was about 10 years ago. I had invested in lithium ion batteries and electric vehicles, small electric vehicles, light electric vehicles. And, you know, at that time, it was not really considered possible that people would just blatantly lie about their accounting to such a brazen extent. But we now know that hundreds of Chinese companies have been deregistered by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The thing that I really learned the hard way is I did go to court, and I trusted in our court system. And I believed that once a court judgment would be obtained, I would have some recourse and some, and it didn't work out that way. This company had raised $100 million in the name of Advanced Battery Technologies. I went, visited them in China. They had three campuses. They had 2,000 people working for them. But when the veneer was pulled off of their accounting, they basically, instead of coming to the table and showing up in U.S. courts, they just generally disappeared. Now, of course, with the situation in China, I can't even visit to see what's going on there. All of the CEOs disappeared. The board of directors disappeared. However, we did win in 2017 a court judgment in the Delaware Court of Chancery. The case is 9542-VCMR, and they turned it over to a court-appointed receiver. That court-appointed receiver is basically the only game in town. His name is Robert Seiden, and his law firm has $1.5 billion worth of cases against Chinese companies like this that have disappeared. To my recollection, to my knowledge, he has only been able to obtain an average of 0.5 to 1% of the total value of those court judgments. So biblical amounts of money have disappeared in this Chinese stock scam. And as we know, they seem to have plenty of money to buy distressed companies. They seem to have plenty of money to, as your recent shows have shown, to nation capture and get people into debt trap, to loan money, and even up including to the first family. It seems that they had no problem waltzing into China and receiving biblical amounts of money. And the point that I would like to make, and think that I've discovered, is that this is our money. This is our money that's being repurposed, because our court judgments are not being honored at all.
And your story, as I say, is a kind of everyman tale for at least, as you indicated, probably tens of thousands, maybe considerably more. And I fear even more are in prospect of being taken to the cleaners by the Chinese Communist Party and its companies. Joel, you mentioned the first family and the access that it had to enormous amounts of money in the person of Hunter Biden. I gather you're prominently featured, if anybody still uses Google, and I don't recommend it, by the way. DuckDuckGo is my search engine of choice. But if you do, your name pops up in connection with what Hunter and his dad did with the CCP. Give us your insights into that and how it bears on your personal experience.
Certainly. Well, as I mentioned, I got this court judgment in 2017, and the court-appointed receiver had visited China several times. Each time he would call the shareholders and say, I think we have a deal on the table. You know, they're going to pay on, you know, a reasonable percentage of the court judgment. Every time he came back to New York, the story changed. And during that time, I became a person that prayed a lot, and different clergy I would speak to would say, you know, promise the creator, the almighty, that you'll give money to charity. And so I did. I would have settled for 10% of the court judgment. I got back less than 1%. Then in the late at the December of 2019, President Trump announced that Hunter Biden had received quite a sizable amount, $1.5 billion for something. And this was covered by the Committee of on Clear and Present Danger China. John Solomon showed what had happened. And I made a filing in his paternity case in Arkansas with the mother of one of his children. And that filing went viral, and Fox News picked it up, and Epic Times picked it up. And in that filing, I proposed that there's a nexus between the biblical amounts of money that have disappeared and how it winds up in the pockets of people. It's pure bribery, basically. It's just bribery, and the truth shall set us free. So anyway, if anyone wants to just Google right now, Joe Biden and China Hustle, or Hunter Biden and China Hustle, you can read all the articles and stories, including the sixth one down is the actual court filing. And in that court filing, you know, I want to speak for a moment about hypocrisy. At the end of the impeachment, Adam Schiff mentioned that the system doesn't work unless people come forward and report wrongdoing. Well, okay, that's a bit of a hypocritical statement for him. But in any case, I used that opening quote in my filing to say we have to have a system that works. And I think as most people that are truly woke, Ral, not just ignorant woke, see that our system is not working. There's two sets of standards here. And I just would be so happy and grateful to, for anybody can just Google Joe Biden and China Hustle and read my story. Thank you.
So when you look at what China is doing today, not just what it has done in the past, the cumulative effect of the various, well, exchange traded funds and index funds and mutual funds and pension plan investments, state and federal, that are now investing individual American savings or disposable income of other kinds, investment dollars in China. What is the principal message you would give people who are either wittingly or in many cases, I'm quite sure unwittingly, Joel, seeing their funds migrate there and into companies that are probably, when all is said and done, no more transparent about their actual, well, status, shall we say, financial and otherwise, than were the companies in which you lost your shirt?
Well, as I mentioned in our last interview, they'd be better off going to Vegas. And what I really want to emphasize is that if something goes wrong and they get called out for accounting fraud, class actions will get you nowhere. You can spend years in court and there will be absolutely no recourse. And that's based on hundreds of companies that have been deregistered and about 30 receiverships that have gone nowhere since 2015. If they wanted to stand up and come to some fair, good faith negotiation, they could have done that easily. They have trillions. They come to Israel, they buy up billions and billions of, that's where I'm talking to you now from, billions and billions of startups, but they don't have money to come and pay off on simple court judgments. And that would be the first thing. Until they pay on these court judgments, there's no precedent for any justice in this entire investment scam that's going on.
And just, again, to put a fine point on your own personal experience in this regard, you essentially had to start over. You made Aliyah to Israel. You live there now and have rebuilt your life, I gather. But this is really an object lesson, it would seem, to all of us. And I appreciate so much your sharing with us your personal insights and experiences, Joel, because they're warnings, really, to American investors. And I guess what I'd like next to ask you about is, what about the responsibility of those in the investment management industry, Wall Street financiers, notably, who are enabling or facilitating or otherwise abetting the China hustle.
They certainly are aiding and abetting the China hustle. And I think they really need to start to put morality over short and our country's national security and human rights issues and just basic honesty and ethics over the immediate needs of making a quick buck, because the cat is out of the bag now. One click around the world, people can see my story, and my story happened hundreds and hundreds of times. So we can see now in the last few days, the China market is going down. People realize that this is a fraud, and they can watch the movie. It takes a few minutes to research this, and these people on Wall Street have to wake up and stop doing this. And in terms of legislation, there are two bills, Senate Bill 945 and House Bill 7000. But these bills give the bad actors in China, or potentially good actors, I suppose, if there are, 3 more years to prove that they're not associated with the Chinese Communist Party. Meanwhile, there are trillions of dollars trading in market cap on our capital markets, as Roger Robinson and some of your other experts, Gordon Chang, have spoken about. Those bills, there could be a solution, a theft tax and a victim compensation fund against those Chinese, because it's now proven that they're not paying on their court judgments. As for the
talk about those in a little bit more detail, what that would involve. They're not in the legislation as things stand now, I gather. And there are some differences between the two bills that will have to be resolved in conference. It's a little unclear to me where this process stands at the moment. Can you shed light on that and again, address a little bit more in detail the kinds of amendments you think are in order?
Well, sure. House Bill 7000 is called the Holding Foreign Companies Accountable Act. It has passed, but it's a toothless bill. It really doesn't have teeth. It requires certain issuers of securities to establish that they are not owned or controlled by a foreign government, which in this case would be alluding to the CCP. It's a very easy thing to research, House Bill 7000. And I just don't think that Congress is truly, this really hasn't been exposed yet. They can't imagine the biblical level of fraud. I'm hoping through this interview that a few of them, especially the sponsors of these two bills, will be in touch with me. I've been trying for years to get my information to folks like Senator Kennedy and Senator Johnson and Menendez. I've reported this so many times to the FBI, and like so many things in our country right now, it just seems that there's a biblical amount of incompetence to match the biblical amount of fraud.
Or willful blindness is another way of describing it, perhaps, averting their gaze. The Senate bill, as I understand it, Joel Kaplan, is somewhat more robust. I don't know if they'd say they have teeth exactly, but that there's a bit more enforcement in it. Is that a correct understanding or not?
It is a correct understanding. It gives them 3 years. Furthermore, if the board is unable to inspect the issuer's public accounting firm for 3 consecutive years, the issuer's securities are banned from trade on the national exchange. So we're looking, this bill was passed in 2020. We're looking at 2023. Well, if over the last 10 or 15 years, they've stolen $100 to $200 billion and defrauded thousands and thousands of Americans, you know, this is going to be their last hurrah, because they just don't seem to have the DNA to just, as Senator Kennedy has spoken about on Fox, just follow our rules. It's so simple. We have rules. We have penalties. We have, be honest, follow the rules. And if you break the rules, pay the penalty.
Well, Joel, I'm not sure whether it's the DNA on their end or whether it's the connivance of people on our end. And, you know, going back to what you were talking about a moment ago in terms of the first family, the man who helped engineer, as you know, the arrangement whereby the Chinese Communist Party's companies do not have to conform to our statutes and regulations governing the capital markets, specifically with respect to transparency and accountability and governance, was none other than then Vice President Joe Biden in a memorandum of understanding back in 2013. So this is something that has been willfully done by the Biden family. There are some who believe there may be some connection between that service rendered and the $1.5 billion that went into Hunter's pocket, as you put it, and evidently to the big guy as well. But these are the sorts of things that impel, it seems to me, a wholesale review, both in the legislative context and in the judicial context, of how we can hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable for a succession of crimes. We talked earlier in the program with Sean Lin about crimes against humanity, like organ harvesting, but criminal actions with respect to the finances of Americans is another. And you are a poster child, if I can use that expression, for what has happened. And I do hope that the senators and members of the House will heed your warnings and your recommendations with respect to important amendments to this legislation. Joel, we are hard out of time. We'll have to come back to you for a more detailed conversation on those amendments soon. But thank you for your time today and for this clarion call. It perfectly sets up the conversation we're going to have with Bill Walton about what's going on more generally with respect to the China market. And I thank you for your time today, my friend, and hope you'll keep at it. And God bless you. Next up, as mentioned, Bill Walton, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we are joined by one of our regulars, our friend Bill Walton, a man who has been a master of the universe on Wall Street in his successful career there, and who has become, in his second career, or maybe third or fourth, I'm not sure, a very successful podcaster who has an expertise on matters involving national security and other policy writ large, self-taught, and very effective in communicating on all of these issues. And we're always pleased to have him do it here. Also a leader of the terrific Council on National Policy, of which I'm proud to be a member. Bill, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Great to be here, Frank.
We've just been talking with an individual by the name of Joel Kaplan about his personal travails as an investor in the China market, where he really lost his shirt, his life savings, his small business had to essentially reboot after the Chinese made off with something on the order of $2 million of his net worth. I wanted to ask you, Bill, about the sort of broader context of what we're seeing in the China market right now, in terms of a lot of evidence that investors' confidence in the Chinese investments they're being encouraged to make is quite possibly going to be misplaced for them too. Tell us what's going on as best you can figure it in China.
The context for me is that this is still growing increasingly a tale of two economies. The big economy, the sophisticated world players are all able to deal with what's going on in China, and they're making common cause with the Chinese Communist Party, which we can talk about. But for the individual investor, the little guy, I really strongly recommend getting yourself quickly into an index fund or putting it with somebody who actually has boots on the ground, and in particular China. That's true for the tech markets as well. We don't know much about the public companies that are being traded in China. The disclosure is at best opaque, at worst non-existent, and you put your money at work in their great peril. And then, you know, particularly for people who are doing private investing, it's not even clear how you get your money out. So it's an illiquid market. It's controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And if you want to think about where you put your savings dollars, I can think of 53 other places I'd rather see you go.
Well, Joel Kaplan said you might as well go to Vegas. It's a crapshoot there.
Well, his odds are probably better in Vegas.
They may well be, even with the House generally winning. Let me just ask you, Bill, because I think the thing that is so peculiar, at least, you know, to me, and I suspect to others, is the Chinese Communist Party itself seems to be taking steps to roil their markets in ways that can only erode investor confidence. Why would they be doing that, best you can tell?
I think they made a calculation that they've depended on the U.S. markets and money managers for years to raise capital and to have their companies be traded in. And I think now they think their middle market has grown to the size that they've got enough investment dollars. They don't need us as much. And if you look at the grand strategy, you know, of course, what they've done in Hong Kong is they basically sucked it into the Chinese Communist Party mainline, and it's no longer a beacon for mainland, rather, and it's no longer a beacon for capitalism and freedom that it once was. And now what they're doing, and this is part of the plan, is they're moving all the investment companies that have been in Hong Kong into Shanghai. And they've got something, I don't remember the name, I think they call it the new market. Anyway, it's just another way of saying, look, you're not going to be in Hong Kong, you're going to be in mainland China. And all the big U.S. Asset managers that move in there, and our old friends at BlackRock have gotten approval to get the first wholly owned American-owned mutual fund allowed to trade in China. But what they're doing is there's a lot of non-economic factors. They just cracked down on the private tutoring industry, which was one of the big success stories in China. Chinese parents are eager to see their kids get ahead, and the testing system really matters there. And they're cracking down. They're putting them out. I think values in those companies have fallen 30-40%. And the explanation is not economic. They want to control what's being taught to the kids. And they don't want that. They don't want that outside of government hands. And there's an eerie parallel between what's going on there and our fight against having critical race theory taught in this country.
Interestingly enough, that CRT stuff is being promoted by people who are probably a lot more aligned with the Chinese Communist Party than they are, you know, sort of American values. But Bill, to this point about BlackRock and some of these other so-called AMCs that are now global asset management companies, very much getting into the China market in China with wholly owned subsidiaries there. This would seem to me to be a further betrayal by Wall Street of our national interests. In other words, that having increasingly by, among others, our Committee on the Present Danger China and the of which you are a member, I'm very pleased to say, and you know the work of Roger Robinson's terrific outfit. We've seen that increasingly, I think, people are in government, among others, very concerned about what's being done in our capital markets. But we seem to be now enabling this shift by the Chinese. And what are the, well, public policy, but national security implications of that as you see them?
Well, the people that run these big asset management companies, and I love that you call me self-taught. I absolutely agree with that. I started out as a U.S. private equity money guy. And then I started looking into these other things. I said, whoa, wait a second. All this China, the developments in China and the critical race theory and what we call ESG, environmental social governance, is overwhelming the allocation of capital process. And unfortunately for us, Frank, BlackRock is only one of many, many, many big asset managers. I think together BlackRock and State Street, and I'm not sure, the other one doesn't, not the tip of my tongue, but the top three money managers control about 90, Vanguard, Fidelity, anyway, they're all roughly the same. And it used to be that Larry Fink was the ESG zealot. And now it turns out that the other CEOs cultures of these big asset managers, as well as the proxy advisory firms, which tell people how to vote, have all moved pretty hard left. And the sad thing is that they seem to be making common cause with China, and they have more attuned with what's, for whatever reason, they're more attuned with what's going on in China. Now, the simple reason, though, is that there's billions and billions and billions of investment dollars now, the savings in China that have been accumulated, and they want a piece of that. And so they see China, and BlackRock has gone on record as saying China is the biggest growth opportunity they have.
When you see
let me help out. They're not friends of freedom, and they're not friends of limited constitutional government. They don't get up in the morning thinking about those sorts of things.
These are globalists, I think it's fair to say, and they've got in mind this global reset, as they call it. But Bill, is it not the case that their hypocrisy with respect to ESG, on the one hand, and their willingness to do basically whatever the Chinese dictate, is putting Americans who are entrusting their funds with such global asset managers, in harm's way in a Chinese market that is very uncertain and potentially, as Joel Kaplan's story makes clear, very risky indeed.
Well, let's break it down. Larry Fink, BlackRock, the ESG, E is environmental, and that's for him, the big one's carbon emissions. And he recently engineered getting three directors put on the Exxon board who don't believe that Exxon ought to be in the fossil fuel business. Instead, it ought to be in wind and solar. So there's that on that one side of the equation. He's very E in that regard. Well, then he turns around and does business with China. And China, of the top 25 countries in the world, top carbon emitters, 23 of the top 25 cities in the world are located in China. And, you know, China is basically a smokestack in terms of its pollution. I mean, I've been to Beijing, but people say they've been there. As you talk about needing masks, you really need masks in Beijing. So he's looking the other way when it comes to China. As regards to the investment returns, he will tell you that he thinks this ESG is going to produce higher returns. The jury's way out on that, because the dirty little secret behind ESG investing is that they've labeled all the big tech companies as ESG worthy companies to invest in. So that means Microsoft, Facebook, Alphabet, Amazon, whatever, are all compliant ESG. And their profits are they're producing 50, 60, 70% quarter over quarter increases in profits just in the last couple of weeks. And so they're great stocks to invest in. And so you can claim that ESG investing is very a great idea and investors will be helped. But we just don't know. I mean, it's also this ESG, the criteria is so mushy that you really begin to think these guys are just virtue signaling and they want a good table or a good hotel room and they go to Davos for the World Economic Forum.
Yeah. At your expense, I think, is the main point here, Bill. And the larger issue for me, of course, is to the extent that these companies, whether they're investing money from Wall Street and America or whether they're helping bring money into China from Chinese subsidiaries, they are doing two things, if I'm not mistaken. One, they are enriching and enabling the Chinese Communist Party, which is our mortal enemy, including the activities of its People's Liberation Army, which has no purpose really other than destroying Americans. And they're doing so, Bill, in a way that is clearly subservient to the Chinese Communist Party. It's Article 7 of its national security law makes it clear that everybody working in China has to do the bidding of the CCP and for that matter, support the PLA. Talk us through that from your perspective, if you would, as a guy with both the financial background that you have and, you know, your skill set now as somebody who understands the national security implications of much of this for us and our country and the free world more generally.
Well, unfortunately, unless you and I and the rest of us are effective in mounting a public hue and cry against them doing this, they're just going to continue piling into China. You know, this is a continuation of the trend started when everybody was wanting to outsource to China, which ended up with the spectacle of Merck shutting down its R&D operations here in the United States and putting a couple billion dollar facility in Beijing. And now people are realizing, boy, our critical drug supply chain is enormously at risk.
Yeah, Rosemary Gibson's talked on your program about that a lot. You're right.
Yeah, but you know, fortunately, thanks to Rosemary, a lot of other people are waking up to it as well. And so there's a whole lot of us who are rethinking this. And the investment dollars that BlackRock and Fidelity and State Street and Vanguard and everybody else want to put into China, these are masters of the universe, Frank. I mean, they think they see things that the rest of us don't see, and they think, you know, they see themselves as bigger than governments. And, you know, they're they certainly think they're bigger than the U.S. government, and how they size up Xi, I'm not exactly sure, but it's there's a lot of hubris here.
A lot of hubris, and again, I think at the end of the day, indifference to the national interests of the United States, and it does seem as though, and I think we're going to watch this increasingly, they may have not too much truck with their own government, to the extent they are still based here in the United States, but they will be kowtowing to Xi Jinping and the directions of the Chinese Communist Party. And again, just to hammer the point one more time, whether it's at the retail investor level, drawing on the experiences of a everyman like Joel Kaplan, or whether it's at the macro level, as seen by a recovering, I might say, master of the universe himself, like Bill Walton, folks, there are plenty of red flags here as to what your money is likely doing in China and what the return on investment may be for you, if any. It could be quite perilous.
Let me give you
very quickly, Bill. We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Talk to your investment advisor. If you don't have one, you can go on the website and you can see what these mutual funds are invested in, and you can take a look at it yourself. And you can engage in your own socially conscious investing by steering away from what BlackRock is doing.
Yeah. Amen. And if you want some help in this regard, check out, have your financial investor, if you have one, check out Kevin Freeman's terrific program, the National Security Investment Consultants Initiative, out of Liberty University. Get them trained up so that they're investing in accordance with your values. Bill Walton, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your time today, as forever. Your help to this program and your great work at the Bill Walton Show is really appreciated. We'll talk with you again soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with a word about a truly great American patriot in urgent need. Rich Higgins served in the U.S. Army and as a key civilian Pentagon official and senior strategist on President Trump's National Security Council. After he left the NSC, Rich continued advising Mr. Trump and others about the threats we are facing from enemies, foreign and domestic. He chronicled his experiences over the past 20 years fighting for America First in a terrific memoir entitled The Memo. Now this courageous freedom fighter is gravely ill due to severe complications caused by the Chinese Communist Party virus. He urgently needs help to defray the enormous costs of successive surgeries and a prospective organ transplant. I urge you to join me in contributing to a GoFundMe campaign named Medical Help for Rich Higgins. That's Medical Help for Rich Higgins at GoFundMe.com. God bless you, and Rich Higgins.